Totalitaria. What if the enemy is the state? Ian Wishart, our special guest tonight on Coast to Coast. And we'll be back with him. More questions, more of your calls when we come right back. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Ian Wishart with us. We're going to take your calls this hour. It's a split show. So this is our final hour with Ian as we talk about his work, Totalitaria. Ian, the late Father Malachi Martin, who was a regular guest on this program, talked about the Catholic Church, talked about the fact that they may have cut a deal with the devil. You look into that. Tell me your thoughts on that.
Yeah, well, I mentioned that pagan occult religious group from the 1870s and how they started to infiltrate the United Nations when it was formed in 1945. And one of the first things that the second Secretary General of the United Nations, Dag Hammarskjöld, he was a Swedish guy, did, one of the first things he did, he was a follower of this particular occult group, and he built an altar made of iron ore at the center of the UN building in New York. And it's now called the UN Meditation Room, but it's an iron altar, the largest piece of iron ore ever mined. And it was built according to occult precepts in a very particular special setup. And it is the only religious feature in the entire United Nations building. And it's dedicated, as you'll read in the book, and this is one of the stunning things, it's dedicated to Lucifer. And the Pope, Paul VI, came to New York in 1965, October the 4th. He was the first Pope to talk at the United Nations. And he went and he prayed before this iron altar. In the book, I've got a picture of the Boston Globe article of that date, October the 5th.
Did he know what that altar was?
Well, I would have given him the benefit of the doubt initially, and I did in my initial research.
Yeah.
But I then discovered that another Catholic priest in Italy had been given a task by the by one of the previous popes to investigate Freemasonry within the Vatican. And he discovered that Pope Paul VI and Pope John the 23rd, who was his predecessor, were both dabbling in Freemasonry.
Interesting.
So then you get to the question of, well, and then the next thing I discovered, and I confirmed this in the records, is that Pope Paul VI, after praying at this altar in the United Nations building to the unknown God of all, he then handed over some of his papal rings and symbols of authority to the then UN Secretary General U Thant, and basically pledged in his speech and his address to the UN, and I quote it in the book, he pledged the allegiance of the Catholic Church to the United Nations and everything that it was going to be doing. So the question then becomes, well, did the Pope effectively knowingly pray before an altar to the Church's archenemy, which is what Malachi Martin had hinted at, but I saw no sign in Malachi Martin's writings that he knew about Pope Paul VI's incident. It was one of those things that was hidden in plain sight. It was part of the papal visit to New York. But unless you knew in 1965, as a journalist or as a commentator, what that altar was and what it signified, you wouldn't have made the connection. You wouldn't have joined the dots. It's only in this book that I've gone all the way back to 1965 and been able to piece together the jigsaw that led up to that, and the things that were then done as a result of that. So Malachi Martin was very clear that there had been black masses conducted within the Vatican.
Yeah.
And I quote some of those in the book and his comments about those. And he was backed up by another archbishop in 1996 in Italy who caused a storm of controversy saying exactly the same things, that Satanism is now rife within the Vatican. But it does raise this question. Has the Church globally done a deal with the devil?
Well, what do you think? Have they?
Well, in the book, this is why you've got to read the book in context. When you see what the agenda of the group behind it is for the world government, and effectively how they've made every single religion virtually bow their knee to this new concept, this new regime, the idea of this new regime, that's what you have to ask the question. Everything is falling into place. It's you know, even for those, I've had readers, for those readers who are not Christian, but who've read the book, it's like all the biblical prophecies are falling into place and they can't believe it. But as I said to them, you know, it's there in black and white. The articles are there. The UN documents are there. The Freemasonry investigations done by the Vatican are there. You can read it and make your own minds up. But it's not just the Catholic Church. It's the Protestant Church has become infested with this. Buddhism has become hit with this. The New Age movement is hit with this. Effectively, the people behind this world government regime have done a very, very effective job of infiltrating all of the main players in a spiritual sense. And so all bets are off as to where this is going to go.
All right, let's go to some calls here for you. We'll go to Allentown, Pennsylvania. Angela is with us. Hello, Angela. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call, and thanks sure. for a wonderful show. This is probably the most important topic that any of us can concern ourselves with. I accidentally stumbled upon a website that was written, that was a spokesman for this group, about a book that he wrote. It's called endtimesnow.com. I don't want to give them publicity, but I want to tell you some details that I found on it. I'm not conventionally religious at all, but their homepage just said in very vague detail they're waiting for their Messiah and he's coming soon. You know, it didn't sound like anything different. I clicked further into it. They had a topic on a page on paganism. And what they said is they consider all other religions to be paganistic and only theirs to be correct. They say that they worship a different God than the rest of us do. They say they created thousands of years ago, they created Christian, modern Jewish, and Muslim religions, but they did it with the wrong rituals so that when we pray, we think we're getting some benefit, but all our energy is really going to them. They say that Jesus and Lucifer work together. They're not interested in helping any of us. They just want to harvest our souls only when enough negative energy has built up. To that end, this group has been infiltrating all of our social, you know, entities, you know, putting out bad films and yada yada to get us fear-based and, you know, like you said, infiltrating the politics and all that. They say that they are soon going to be, they want to cause a mass killing so that these souls can get ready for Jesus and Satan to come down and harvest, after which they will be rewarded with, you know, eternal control and, you know, those themes that we've already heard.
Is that part of the paganism that you looked into, Ian?
Yeah, it's very similar. And this is the thing, this is why people really need to wake up and decide whether the tune that they're humming and whether the thing that they've been following is leading them into a place that they don't really want to go. The group that is behind this has very carefully reworked the doctrine of all the major religions. You can walk into an evangelical megachurch in California and you can hear effectively the doctrine that was written back in 1870 by this group being preached to you. And it'll be phrased in biblical terms, but at its heart, it won't be biblical. You can read the bits in totalitarian about the Catholic Church and what Pope Paul VI did and so forth. And you can, again, see things that he says and indeed what's happened since that are not biblical, regardless of whether you believe in Christianity or not. If the proof of Christianity is that you can test it against the Bible, the proof of any religion is you can test it against its own religious writings. If the religion is no longer holding to its religious writings and, in fact, is preaching something entirely different to it, then that suggests that there's a problem with the religion, regardless of whether the religion's real or wrong. You know, that's a separate debate.
Right.
If it's preaching something different to what its own sacred books are saying, then it's not really that religion, if you follow my logic.
Where does Buddhism come in?
Well, this is a fascinating part of the book. Like most people, I mean, we see Buddhas everywhere, and it's a very popular religion, especially in the West. And what I didn't know until I was researching totalitarian is that up until about the 1870s, Buddhism was almost extinct as a religion. It had been banished from the Indian mainland because of the Muslim takeover of the India continent. Mm-hmm. Its only strongholds left were in Tibet and Nepal to a very small extent, and in Ceylon, or now we know as Sri Lanka, and a couple of monasteries in Japan. But it was effectively dead. There were only a few thousand followers of Buddhism left in the 1870s. Now, what this group did when they received their channeled thoughts from their spirit entity, they were told to go into the East and re-energize Buddhism. And they went to Sri Lanka, and they rewrote Buddhist doctrine according to what they'd been told by the 2,000-year-old spirit entity that they were channeling. This is the one who said the world government's coming, prepare for it. And they actually rewrote Buddhist precepts very subtly, very carefully, but, you know, it just takes you a little bit, a couple of degrees off aim, off accuracy, and all of a sudden it's no longer going to hit the target on time. And that's what they did. And then they sent out monks from the Sri Lankan monasteries who'd been trained by them out into India, Tibet, Japan, everywhere like that, to reintroduce Buddhism to the world and into the West. And they did it very successfully. But all modern Buddhism, and I quote this in the book, there's some fascinating scholarly studies of religion by Buddhist scholars. And they say quite openly in their published papers, modern Buddhism is not authentic Buddhism. It's actually the Western occult in drag. So what we now recognize as Buddhism on a daily basis, or evangelical Christianity to an extent on a daily basis, or Catholicism from the Vatican on a daily basis, when you look harder into it, as I've done in Totalitaria, you see all of these major religions have become tainted with the doctrine of the group that wants to impose the one world government. And this is part of their conditioning of the public to accept it. If they can get their doctrine subtly preached from pulpits, from monks, from religious groups around the world, all singing the same song, then as Angela makes the point, then public consciousness and energy goes into that dream, that vision of bringing back their Messiah. Except the question is, who is their Messiah? And of course, that question is answered in the book.
Let's go to Ray in Niles, Ohio, east of the Rockies. Raymond, go ahead. You're on with us.
Hi, George and Ian. Hey. I have a three-part question. The first is, the Chinese, of course, have not been friendly toward individual rights, but it seems to me they want their own power, and I'd like to know how the globalists plan to bring them to tow. Secondly, the Muslims, I don't think, would be very interested in converting to another religion, and they're going to fanatically oppose it, and I want to know your opinion on how the globalists would deal with that. And thirdly, sometime later in this century, life extension is going to become a reality. Now, even from a non-globalist point of view, there certainly are some undesirables on this planet that we don't want hanging around for the next 500 years. And the globalists are probably not going to offer life extension to everybody. So are we going to start saying, you live, you die, you live, you die, make godlike decisions concerning each person? I mean, right now we're saying everyone's entitled to health care, but I don't think everyone's going to be entitled to life extension. And I want to know your opinion on how that would play out with the globalist point of view.
I'll start with point number two about Islam. The group that's behind this that I've laid out in Totalitaria have targeted specifically Judaism, Christianity, and Islam as being faiths that they want to knock the hard edges off and change their doctrine and force those followers to believe in a new doctrine. And the way they're trying to do that is through indoctrination. Now, of course, if you can't get UN education programs into Islamic countries and you can't get United Nations policies into Islamic countries, then it becomes harder to make those changes. So then you have the issue of, are the globalists creating effectively terrorist attacks, not necessarily dressing up in drag and going out and doing it themselves, but inciting terrorist attacks to turn the opinion of the world against fundamentalist Islam, against Judaism, against a whole range of things to marginalize these people and to get people on a global level motivated to do something about it. And even eventually they hope to persuade other Muslims to start thinking in a more Western way. Now, again, many people out there would say, it's a great thing to have Muslims thinking in a Western way, and I'd probably agree with that. But again, this is part of the manipulation about if these people can do that to that faith, they can do it to you. They can re-educate you. So Islam does present a problem, but it's identified in the book specifically as a problem. And I do question how many of the incidents that are raising tensions between Islam and the West are effectively manufactured tensions. The first point about China is also a good one. China is the big question mark. It's a massive country, doesn't really have the ability to project its authority far beyond its borders at the moment. It doesn't have the sort of naval capacity that the United States has, but it's building. It's undergoing the fastest rearmament of any country since World War II. So it will become a major power player across the Pacific. They are running out of space, but the Chinese like to do things commercially as much as anything else. And so, you know, you have countries to the south like Australia and New Zealand, which have, you know, relatively small populations compared to their land size. And there's a lot of Chinese investment in those countries and in the US as well, for that matter. In a sense, that culture is coming into contact with us on a daily basis there. If the world turns to a global treaty, they are going to try and get China to become part of that. The same pressure that they bring to bear on the United States in terms of backing out of any such treaty, they would also bring to bear on China. But then again, if the US and China together felt cornered by the rest of the world, then that would be a pretty formidable partnership, ironically. So, you know, again, the bets are off. There's no question that they're pushing for this treaty left, right, and centre. And every time they get knocked back, they try and rustle it up in a new form like they're going to do in 2015. And it is a complex issue, but they are trying to do it. Yeah, I guess that's the point there. Now, the third issue you raised, the life expectancy, you're dead right. There will be an ability to extend life, but already those decisions, those ethical decisions are being made about who deserves medical treatment and who doesn't. And again, people are being conditioned to think of it in terms of cost-benefit analysis instead of human ethics and so forth. So the whole process of educating our children to think along these lines as well and train, the younger generation already do, to some extent, think along these lines. The older generation are being taught to think you're a burden to society if you continue living and draining our resources. Just go kill yourself. Now, you've got to understand the globalists would like a lower population overall, yep. And that's part of their plan as well.
Let's go to Ann in St. Paul, Minnesota. Ann, go ahead real quickly for you. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I've had the idea for some time that the reason why information about extraterrestrials visiting Earth haven't been revealed by the United States, the reason why they've been holding back on making the revelation is because of how that would shift our thinking, how we think of about ourselves. That we would stop thinking of ourselves as American citizens and start thinking of ourselves as global citizens. And it seems to me that I see what you're saying, what they want is exactly that, and that the revelation of extraterrestrials is something that they're holding back on until the most propitious moment, and then they'll make the revelation, and then we'll all get on board thinking of ourselves as global citizens.
Well, you may be right about that, Ian, something you really haven't addressed, but, you know, that's always that possibility. Again, it's that control. If ETs have been visiting us here, then we're going to want free energy. We're going to have freedoms. They don't want to do that. It comes down to control again, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does come down to control. One of the things, the points I make in the book is that I'm of the view that the whole debate about, you know, left versus right or conservative versus liberal is a divide and rule tactic. I think at heart, you know, we're all people who have relatively good hearts. We all want the same sort of things for our families and ourselves.
But you're right. It divides the planet right down the middle. We're coming back with more phone calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, find out why our television program Beyond Belief is one of the fastest growing internet-based TV shows. You can. It's great technology, and you can watch it for free for 10 days by going to www.beyondbelief.com. Make sure you grab the past program of Lloyd Pye, as we talked about the Star Child Project. And Lloyd, as you know, passed away this week. Just a wonderful person. Take advantage of it. Watch the show free, beyondbelief.com. Welcome back to Coast. Ian Wishart with us, of course, talking about his book, Totalitaria. What would you say, Ian, would definitely be a telltale sign that this implementation was working?
Well, I think the evidence is writ large in policies that are being introduced right around the world, and in fact, in the book, as an example, there's a debate in America at the moment about Common Core education curriculum, and this is a based on a UN education curriculum idea that's been formulated, as I said, for decades. And it was introduced into New Zealand about 10 years ago under the name National Standards and what have you. And one of the things it pushes is very much a focus on environmental issues, environmental religions. And there's a fascinating exam paper that I've provided links to in the book, which is at high school, you know, senior high school level. And kids are asked to compare different forms of government and write their opinions about them based on what they've been taught. And without question, they're all bagging Western civilization as stuffed and going with indigenous shamanistic religious societies and practices as being the ideal model for the future. Now, this is exactly what the UN wants people to follow. So it's an example of the, and it's in Agenda 21 as well, that they want kids to be educated to think along these lines. So here you have a UN policy in the form of Agenda 21 dictating what the education curriculum should contain. Then you see the education curriculum containing that information and put into practice. Then you see the kids coming out of it, you know, repeating it almost verbatim. But it's entirely in their thinking. Their whole way of thinking has changed. And so when I see that, it's almost like invasion of the body snatchers, really.
Right.
And I'm an environmentalist. Please, people, don't get me wrong. I've always been strong on environmental issues and the need to keep our planet clean and green. And New Zealand makes a strong policy push for that as well. But we've got to be careful all the way to not be fooled by clever marketing slogans. It's in politics, we call this a lizard brain reaction. These are things that are designed to get the public on side, hitting them in their subconscious where they just go along with it because they agree with it without even thinking about it. And if you can manipulate people through their lizard brain reaction, it's much easier to get them to accept things at face value and you want to hit them with the big stuff. And that's what we're seeing rolled out worldwide now. And there's a huge push for control of education because this is what's at the heart of it. And once the education system is controlled and the new generation is controlled, your future voters are controlled. And that's where it's going.
Yeah. Let's go to Frank in Denver, Colorado. Welcome to the program, Frank. Go ahead.
Hello, Ian. You bring up a very interesting subject. I've been studying it for many, many decades. And what I've discovered is we are waking up to our true unlimited powers. And I'm wondering if your globalization will aid that or continue to block it.
Well, that's part of what the debate's about. The knowledge and power are a double-edged sword. We are waking up to what we're capable of doing as humans, but the human story has always been about pushing the limits, and sometimes that causes immense harm. The globalists want everyone to think that they have unlimited powers. And as long as they keep feeding people that line and giving people something to feel good about, then people will go along with the program. Meanwhile, the real program, the real agenda goes on behind the scenes. So while everyone's rolling around thinking, I'm great, I'm perfect, I'm good, I've got all of this, like I'm doing the right thing, I'm doing the good thing for the planet, etc., the real agenda is being swept in behind the scenes. What the purpose of totalitaria is to say, okay, we all recognize there is some merit in some of these things, but please do not let them fool you. This is a bait and switch operation. Don't take your eye off the ball. It is really, really crucial now. If this deception is now spread through Buddhism, the New Age, the Christian Church, the Catholic Church, and what have you, and into politics and business, that is a pretty major deception. And these people have a lot of money, they have a lot of power, and they have a certain end goal that they want to institute. I've laid this clear in the book. The agenda is, the evidence is laid out, the agenda is laid out. You can read it, make up your own mind, and put it in your own context in terms of what you believe, what you've been taught, what you've heard and read about, and you can see for yourself whether you are being manipulated, for lack of a better word.
Ian, you've heard of the Bilderbergs.
Absolutely,
part of the group?
Yes.
Yeah, same thing, right?
The book, yeah.
Yep. They're all
Well, this is the thing. They are part of the elite. Who would like to control the world. This comes back down to people who think that they know what's best. None of the people involved in this, and I make this point in totalitarian, none of the people we're talking about are going into this with open evil intentions. Even the corporate bosses think they're doing the right thing. Nobody thinks that they're going to change the world with the version of Dr. Evil. They all think they're doing it for the right reasons. But delusion can cover a range of sins. And the reality is that the power that they want to bring in, the infrastructure that they want to bring in, the world government system that they want to bring in, will be unstoppable once it is put in place. And all of a sudden, you know, you might think for all the right reasons, yeah, this is a great thing, one world government. You know, we'll all become brotherhood of man, peace around the world, no more war, no more sadness, etc. 10, 15 years down the track, when they've got the power, what will they do with it? That's the question people should be asking themselves.
Let's go to Jeff in La Quinta, California. Hey, Jeff, go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you very much for taking my call, George. This show is just nothing but enlightenment. Ian, thank you for your research. Listen, I'm just going to put my two cents in. I think that in America right now, this push for government control has gotten out of control with the healthcare issues. And I think that our president, who's been caught lying to the American people, and all of this deception, whether it's Benghazi or the IRS, getting into people's lives, you know, the Department of Education and the union corruption and the poor teachers we have. I thank God for the opportunity that George's show gives and, you know, to let people, to educate them. I mean, that's what it's all about, to educate. And I think you could change anybody's religion if you feed them and house them. And that's what these radicals are doing to the Muslims. They're the ones who take care of all these, you know, disenfranchised people.
Sure. You've got it in one. But, of course, this issue is bigger than politics. It's bigger than, as I said, bigger than left or right. It doesn't matter who you elect as president. It really doesn't. Because behind the presidency, you have a team of unelected bureaucrats.
The puppet masters.
Some of whom have been there for their entire careers. Some of whom, as you'll read in Totalitaria, are open followers of the one world government system. And they see it as their mission to put it in place in America, bit by bit, regardless of what the president or the executive team think. It doesn't really matter. And one of the things we've discovered in New Zealand is it doesn't matter whether you vote left or whether you vote right. The end result seems always to be the same, more of the same. And when the UN treaties are taken into account, and they will definitely make it the same, the public will have virtually no input or control whatsoever. You still have the vote. You'll still feel good on election day. You'll still have the parties and the rah, rah, rah. But it won't mean anything because the real work, the real power will be being wielded behind the scenes. New Zealand's a test case for this. We are well on the way towards this. It is coming to America too. My purpose at Totalitaria is to lay out a warning for people everywhere. People of good hearts, left or right, liberal, conservative, new age, Christian, whatever. You know, read the information for yourself and put it in your context and start to tell your friends about it because it is extremely important.
What do they do? Use New Zealand as a test market?
Yeah, they do, because it's a small country, so there's not massive costs involved in putting any major infrastructure up. It's also easy to experiment on because we are a very free market country in terms of our economy. You can come in and you can do almost anything you like in New Zealand. So you can set up, and corporations do. They come in and they test new technology and so forth often before the rest of the world gets it rolled out. And we are very big in the UN system and very much beholden to that. So, of course, the UN pats us on the head and says, we'd like to see you adopt this. New Zealand education reforms are being hailed by American educators as the place they want to be. There's a reason for that, because New Zealand's further ahead than the US in implementing these UN education goals. So it's not, again, it's not that New Zealand is evil. It's just that New Zealand is just an easy country that has been used to test some of these theories and ideas out on, and they can increasingly get rolled out. New Zealand has had socialised healthcare for a long time. So for us, for our society down here in New Zealand, it is openly accepted that the government will pay your health bill. But the flip side of that is we have a health system that, although our surgeons are as good as any in the world, they don't have the money necessarily for some of the high-tech equipment and gear and drugs that the American system has. And that's where you run the risk when you have socialized healthcare, is that eventually the standards start to slip. But these are debates that you can have at another time. They're part of this whole approach, and it is true. When you feed people, when you house people, when you take care of people, they come to look on you with love. George Orwell made that point in 1984. It's happening now. And the tipping point is almost here.
Tom in Riverside, California. Thanks for holding, Tom. Go ahead.
Yeah, George, thanks for taking my call. And Ian, I'd like to ask you a couple of questions about the – there was a talk on the Saturday show about the purging of the U.S. military regarding the nuclear arsenal and the START Treaty. And it seems like the only hope that this country and the world has is really the U.S. is the only one that can stop it, I think. And we got our cousins, you know, the Britain and Canada and New Zealand and Australia. And but this is this doctrine's been put in place. And I just, you know, you're saying your country is pretty well advanced in this. What would you say would be the best way to stop this? I think really it would almost take a revolution, and we'd have to go through a tremendous reality check to stop it. Even if the people knew what happened on 9/11, I don't believe that they would do anything.
You run the risk, of course, that when enough of the public are beneficiaries of the policies involved, that they won't side with you. So any revolution is going to be difficult because you'll end up having, instead of the American people united against a common enemy, it would be the people against the people, and again, divide and rule. And this is the problem, because, and this is why it's important for people to sort of come to terms with what's being planned and really sort of raise the alert level at a home and in a neighborhood level. The only way for America to fight this is for the people to sort of say, okay, I can now distinguish between what I'm being sold and what really is happening. Mm-hmm. And whilst I can agree with the grand slogans that say peace, love, brotherhood, and everything else like that, we're all, you know, citizens of this planet, I can agree with that, but not at the expense of you sliding in some new regime under my distraction that I wasn't paying attention to. And so, as I said earlier in the show, this will only happen to America in its final stage when America ratifies a global governance treaty. So at the stage when that happens is the stage that's the last chance for the American people to actually take any impact, because the other factors in this are, as we mentioned earlier in the show, with the United Nations pushing for its member states to disarm and hand their military powers across to the UN, increasingly America would be under pressure to reduce its military capacity, certainly at an offensive international level. Then you have the issue of disarming of the population,
which is going to be difficult.
Which is going to be difficult, but they will turn you against. They will turn people against the idea of arming of the population, because they will have so many gun massacres and so forth pop up that the public will just be sickened by it, and they will beg for relief.
Yeah,
and that is where this is going. That is the agenda that they are following. I hate to sound cynical, but that is, you know, it's PR 101.
George in Kauai on the island of Hawaii. Go ahead, George. Thanks.
How's it? I just wanted to point out that you're saying things as though they're bound to happen, and you don't know that for a fact. That's actually probably not true. I don't think you know Americans very well. We're not going to give up our guns for any reason. We'd much rather shoot people than give up our guns.
Yeah, I'm not suggesting that the average American, I understand Americans well. I'm not suggesting the average American is going to give up on that. What I am suggesting to you is that the powers that be are manipulating for all that they can.
Yeah, they're going to try, but they're not. You don't know that they're going to succeed. And George, I think the reason that people accuse you of fear mongering is you were chiming in saying that it's going to happen too.
No, I never said that.
Talking about the
no. Never said it was going to happen.
No, you were when you were saying that the UN stuff is going to go through behind our back, and the legislators don't even read it.
That's true, but that happens all the time.
Yeah, but you know that that's going to happen this time, and when you see
that's my prediction. No, it has happened before. George, it's going to happen again. That's my thoughts. That's my predictions.
It has happened. We don't know it's going to happen again. It's only going to happen again if we don't step up and change it. And if we just sit back and say, oh, it's going to happen. Then
most people, George, most people, and you know it, will sit on their butts and not do anything.
But
you know
that. But it's because we have people on the air saying, oh, it's just going to happen.
No, it's not. It's people like me that try to get people off their behinds to get things done. Simple as that. Your thoughts, Ian?
Yeah, I mean, you won't change people's behavior unless you actually give them a reason to focus on something. What we're trying to do, what I'm trying to do with Totalitaria, is saying, look, if you don't focus on this now, in 15 years' time, you're going to have a major problem.
See, I think George is naive.
I think he's got a good heart, but he's right. There's no guarantee it will happen. But by the same token, this is what the boiling frog syndrome. When you have an entire generation educated to think in world government terms and to think of the United Nations as the supreme planetary organization over and above the U.S. system, when you have a generation in school starting to be taught that, then in 15 years' time, they will be ready to vote. And they might not agree with your own personal views on population arming and so forth. They may well take a UN position, and it won't happen by force, it'll just happen by the vote. And then the question is going to be, well, you know, we're all 15 years older by then, are we in the capable of mounting the revolution, or have we lost our mojo, or was the system and time moved against us? That's why we have to focus on these things now and be aware of what the plan is. And trust me on this, the book has got nearly 500 citations and footnotes. The plan is laid out chapter and verse in Totalitaria, right back to the UN documents. People can read them for themselves and see exactly what I'm getting at. And that's the beauty of it. You can see what they're up to.
And they want this thing done fast, don't they, Ian?
They do. They tried to get it in 2009 at Copenhagen. They failed. They're coming back again at 2015 for the sustainability goals. They're calling it something different this time to try and get around that. The overarching aim, however, is always the same. It is to put in place a global infrastructure which requires every government to sign an international treaty agreeing to participate that they can't get out of, which will then make them beholden to certain sustainability targets. And once you have those sustainability targets set by the UN, then the US economy becomes beholden to them. So effective control of the US economy passes from the US president and the administration to the United Nations.
Well, good job. The book, of course, Totalitaria by Ian Wishart. When we come back, we don't die. A skeptic's discovery of life after death.